and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses. It's 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Where?
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. How are you, philosopher kings, working class heroes, lurking conservatives, progressive utopians with no sense of humor? Thank you, Seattle. Had a great time for my one day in Seattle. What an amazing turnout I had out there, Riley. Had a good time. A lot of people asking about you. They said, send my regards to Riley. I'm going to send my regards to you.
Well, tell them I said hello, but don't try and touch me.
Well, man, I'll tell you, that first show, Saturday night, packed it out. A lot of Morning Sedition listeners. A lot of, as you know, Brian was there because he called yesterday.
We got a full report on your show from Brian.
Brian from Everett, man. As I'm walking to the stage, dude, as I'm walking up there, he grabs me. He's like, I'm Brian from Everett. And I'm like, hey, buddy, what's going on? But the crowds are great. And somebody, one woman, Roxy, our pharmacist friend, brought me a whole box full of cat toys for my cats. Thank you, Roxy. They're enjoying those very much. She's our pharmacist friend. We did the last one. She stayed for both shows, was doing publicity for the show and the station on her own, handing out flyers. People were coming with bumper stickers to sign. It was very exciting.
Does she want to come to New York?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe she'll come. It was so funny.
She'd be our official PR representative.
Yeah, why not? Well, she could work for down there at 641 with the rest of them. But look. Let me tell you.
The rest of our PR.
Well, no, we have good PR people. I have nothing against those women down there. They've done nothing.
Yeah, they've been really
our
good.
PR person, who I don't need to mention names in there. She came with me to Conan on Friday and watched that whole scene. Met some people.
Cool.
That was a pretty good experience. Some people came up from the Conan O'Brien show. That was one of those nights. I got to hug Jeff Goldblum. How often do you get to do that?
Uh-oh.
He didn't even know me. I don't even know why I hugged him. He just Goldblum just seems like one of those guys you can hug if you want. He's got that kind of charming, kind of like a magnanimous, boundaryless being to him, and he did some bit, and I just walked up and I said, great, man, that was genius. I gave him a big hug, and he gave me a big hug, and it was all very pleasant.
Excellent.
But the weird thing is that Roxy, my pharmacist friend out there in Seattle, friend of the show, doing the publicity for us on her own, freelancing, gives me this box of toys, and she's a pharmacist. There's all these weird pill bottles and stuff, and one of them was actually one of those injectable things that had liquid in it, and
uh-oh.
I said, wow, this is a real high-end cat toy. I have to shoot the cat up for them to have a good time. And she said, no, it was just meant to be a toy. What else have I got to say? Today, special day. Today, Mark Maron, 6 years clean and sober. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Wonderful.
Big day.
Nice work.
You can do it. I want to inspire some of those other people out there. Because actually, I got an email from some guy who's, after he saw my show, he's like, I'm trying to get off the pot and stuff. You can do it, man. You're going to have to find your own way to where you need to do it, too, because I'm not allowed to publicize or promote that because it's an agreement we make with the cult. You can't. You can get sober. I'm just, I want to provide some hope. If I can do it, you can do it. And I no longer wake up hungover, just self-hating sometimes. But
happens to the best of us.
I tell you, man, it's weird to be, when I really think about it, being off drugs and booze for 6 years, it's mind-blowing. The amount of my life has changed and the good things that have happened.
There you go.
But I'll tell you, I'm not on the shuttle. I'm Mr. Segway. That's what I want to be called, Mr. Segway. And I'm assuming those guys aren't hungover. But the shuttle astronauts of Discovery were told to bypass their first landing opportunity on Tuesday and then their second. And today they had to bypass their initial first landing opportunity that was supposed to be at 6:43. And now that was at Cape Canaveral. And now they're scheduled to land at 8:12 at Edwards. I'll tell you, if I was up there, Riley, as I said last week, just in dealing with the repairs and everything else, just the amount of issues and problems that have gone on, I'd be like, oh, dude, please, can we just come home? Can we just come down?
I'd be asking, like, what, you don't want us back or something? What's going on here?
But, like, tomorrow they run out of gas, right, dude?
Yeah, tomorrow they're running out of gas. Now, the weather conditions at Edwards Air Force Base, which is the second choice, it's pretty good. It looks like they can probably do that landing. White Sands, New Mexico, which you're familiar with.
Yes.
The third spot has apparently this rain in the forecast, much like the situation in Florida that precluded them being able to land there.
That's messy. I think when it rains in White Sands, it dissolves a little bit. It's gypsum. That's what I heard.
Really?
I've been to White Sands. It's a pretty fascinating place. That's where you can go down and see. They actually have a bomb museum down there. Because that's where they, it was a test place. You can go see the models for the bombs. But I hope they get down. I guess they'll be coming down on this show.
Yeah.
So we'll let you know that's supposed to happen in a couple of hours.
Well, they got two passes now. If they don't make it at 8:12, it would be 9:47 Eastern time, would be the second pass if they can't make the first.
Wow. So this is, it's going to be exciting, and I hope everything works out okay. The other thing, I tell you, the amount of stuff I compressed up in Seattle in a one-day period, because I flew out there Friday night, got in Friday night. Saturday, I had all day to hang out with my wife and do this and that. Then we had the shows on Saturday night, and then Sunday I just had the day, and then I took the red-eye back. I'm sorry to get back into this. But, man, I went swimming in Lake Washington. I had some good food. I went out and had the fried scallops down at Pike's Market at Jack's Fish Shack or whatever it's called at the counter there. Hung out with my in-laws. And it's weird when you start to see, like, her mother's husband, Ira, is a big cook guy. Like, you know, like I'm watching, I'm like, sometimes you wonder, why is my wife with me? And all Ira does is he the entire day he's prepping food. And I'm like, see? She's used to this. You know what I mean? All right, so let's talk about Jeanine Pirro says that she will seek the Republican nomination and challenge Hillary Clinton for her Senate seat next year. Tell me a little bit about her, because this is your neighborhood, Riley.
Well, she's a longtime Westchester district attorney. Her millstone is her husband, and it's interesting because some in the media are comparing Bill and Hillary Clinton to Al and Jeanine Pirro. There are several important differences. Al Pirro went to jail for tax fraud, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, in 1997, he had to admit fathering a child out of wedlock during his marriage to Jeanine. This is with a woman in Indiana.
Uh-huh.
So he's got problems. There are also allegations.
Yeah, he went way out of state to have that sex.
Yeah, exactly.
he really planned it right, but it still backfired.
Well,
huh?
Maybe he was trying to avoid her wrath, but obviously that didn't happen.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't have wanted to be a fly on the wall when he had to tell her that.
So she has a lot of personal liability, and what we're assuming is that they're running her against Hillary just to make a dirty race, just to drag out as much crap as they can, and make her look wounded or to at least take some shots at her, because she is the front runner right now in terms of popularity for the presidential run in 2008, no?
Oh, yeah. And Jeanine Pirro is coming out of the gate saying, I will be a senator for my full term. Hillary Rodham Clinton is simply using the job as a stepping stone. That's the first volley. It's going to get really ugly, assuming, of course, that Jeanine Pirro wins the primary, because right now Ed Cox, who was the son-in-law of the late President Richard Nixon, who was married, I believe, to Trisha Nixon, he is still in the race. He is running, so there may be a primary between Cox and Pirro, and that could hurt Pirro very badly if she has to spend a lot of money to beat him.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. I mean, apparently it's really a long shot, and Clinton is this is just going to be, she knew this was coming.
She knew.
They just found somebody to run. They know that Pirro can't win, and they know that the best that can happen is they somehow damage Clinton's whatever. They try to do that.
I got
to
tell you, in New York, politics, there's never say never. When a guy, an obscure state senator from upstate by the name of George Pataki, ran against Mario Cuomo, everybody said, oh, you know, he's got no shot. He's just a sacrificial lamb. Al D'Amato conned him into making the run. The guy won the election.
Yeah.
So you can never be absolutely certain that someone has no chance.
All right, then I won't say that. Hey, look who's on the phone, Brian from Ember.
Uh-oh.
Brian, what's going on, buddy? Thanks for coming to the show.
Hey, Brian.
I really enjoyed it, and you really totally, like I said yesterday, dismantled all my delusional frames of existence. So,
I like that you reached out and handed me a cassette tape of your stuff.
Well, I'm just trying to give something back.
I appreciate it. I got it at home. We just have to find a cassette player. They no one makes those anymore.
Yeah,
go down to the thrift shop. But I have a song that needs no introduction, really.
Okay.
And this is for you.
Thank you very much.
Because I really loved it.
Oh, good.
There's a funny guy named Marin, and we're giggling while he's sharing all the issues that we're caring about. But for me, it's just a phone-in, 'cause I'll never be on Conan with artificial serotonin. But I'll try to keep you groaning with a song. So Mark Maron, don't you screw us. Do the funny like you do us. Bring the misery like Richard Lewis, and we'll all be gay.
Thank you, Brian. It was great meeting you. I hope to see you again. You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's 16 past the hour. It's, what is it, Tuesday?
Tuesday.
We're going to talk in just a few minutes about Howard Dean came out swinging again, and a very intuitive perception about what the future of the Republican wedge issue will be, and it's about immigrants. We're going to talk about that in just a second. 16 past the hour.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. You know why I'm praying for you? Because you're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Is a comedian and the host of Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Please welcome very funny fellow Mark Maron.
Yesterday, how did I spend the day? I spent the entire day almost going to the gym.
Oh,
you're
really?
The day where you're just like, you're going to go, and then every hour you're like, damn it, I'm going. I got to go.
Right.
Have you ever gotten to the point where you actually put your gym clothes on, get to the door and go, I can't. And then go back into the apartment and masturbate. You ever have that? Not just that, but then rationalize it as exercise, all right? Like, you're like, I got my heart rate up, and I'm still wearing my sneakers.
All right, now, that's just terrible.
No, it's my life. I have a concern. Here's my fear, that the reason I got the iPod is I'm afraid I'll fall off the evolutionary technology thing.
Right.
You know, like, I don't even know what my phone does. I do know it calls people, but I had the book, and I learned how to call people. That's the end of it. But I have this fear that someone's going to, like, hover by me, like, 2 feet off the ground, like, zzz, and I'm going to be like, what the hell is that? And they're just going to go, I don't know, my phone does it. You know what I mean?
Morning Sedition airs weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on Air America Radio. Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Always nice talking to you. Mark Maron will be right back. North Mississippi All-Stars.
Yes, that was me. It's 22 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey!
That was a little the thing the fellas put together to remind me of what I did on Friday night. It's interesting. It just comes and goes. You go in. I love going to NBC. NBC's great. Sometimes, because NBC's like real television. It's like old school television, Riley. I've been at NBC where they're working on bits, and they'll walk. You'll see a horse walk down the hall. You're like, what the hell? It's like the television show or something. Because it's just for one comedy bit they do stuff. It's unbelievable.
Really? But,
oh, yeah. The production value of that show is great. Hey, this Friday, folks, we're going to broadcast live from O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia, food critic Ed Levine will be there. We'll have free coffee giveaways. That's Friday from 6 to 9 at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. Taking it to a new part of town there, Riley.
Yeah.
All right, dig this. On Monday, here in New York City, a harmless gas was released in the streets and in the subways in a drill to see how to respond to chemical or gas attacks. A spokesperson for the Urban Dispersion Program, which is funded by the Department of Homeland Security, said as it was the first of six test days between now and August 26th, the gas will be released at different locations and times of day to see how it spreads in various conditions. It is to see how gas disperses itself through the city, and so they can be more effective if evacuation is necessary. So they're trying to isolate patterns in terms of how gas moves through the city if somebody were to release a toxic substance in a terrorist attack. 100 or so scientists and 50 assistants are working on this project and have set up more than 200 sampling stations. Now, the gases, if you're curious, the two gases being used are sulfur hexafluoride and perfluorocarbon. They're both odorless and colorless, and I'm assuming they're not bad for you. But if you do have allergies to sulfur hexafluoride that you know about, you might want to, take the day off. Well, this is what kind of gets me. Norman Siegel, who's been on our show before, he's a candidate for public advocate. He was pissed off at the city for not alerting people more effectively to the release of these gases, which are harmless and which are actually, I think, they're actually being proactive here. They're taking home security money and they're doing something that seems completely reasonable to me.
Well, it is reasonable because that is, I think, every, certainly in this city, every New Yorker's nightmare. People ride the subways, people are out in the street, And in this kind of very compressed environment where there, you know, a very high density of people walking the streets, the idea of some kind of poison floating around in the air scares the bejesus out of people as much as the potential for bombs.
Right.
So you do have to do some kind of testing. They've done extensive testing, by the way, in the subway system as well. Norman, you know, I love Norman.
He's a great guy. He fights the fight.
Running for office, for God's sake.
All right, because this is one of those fights. It's like with all the stuff that's going on with mercury in the fish, with mad cow disease, with toxins in the air already. They're out there in Queens, you know, spraying what
for West
it?
Nile?
For West Nile virus, and I don't even know when that happens. I knew about this, and Bloomberg says, you know, he has alerted the people and is harmless, but basically Siegel's issue was that, well, you know, you got to be more effective in alerting people so if people want to leave and not be, you know, covered in hexafluoride or perfluorocarbon, they have that choice. I understand that, but I do think this is a proactive thing, and I think hopefully it will yield some results. And I have no idea if we would have to evacuate anywhere in this city. What the hell would you do? You know, how? I don't even want to talk about it.
It'd be a difficult thing, but I'm assuming these aren't the same gases they use in San Quentin. So I'd imagine they're pretty safe.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think they're... I'm not going to get too paranoid. Let's talk about Howard Dean for a second, if we can. Howard Dean said on Friday at a rally the night before the DNC's Hispanic summit in San Antonio, he said in many ways that Republicans will try to make immigrants the scapegoats in the next election. And he's basically talking about... I'll just quote Dean. Dean said, in Colorado, the chairman of the Republican Party endorsed Tom Tancredo for re-election. This is morally reprehensible. Now, Tancredo, Riley, you've done some research on.
He's a scary human being. Yeah, he is really scary.
He is, he has drawn a lot of flack from Hispanic groups in calling for tougher immigration enforcement and a proposal to tax some of the money immigrants sent home.
Not only that, they want to try and make it so that babies who were born in the United States to illegal immigrants would no longer automatically be citizens.
Yeah, and he also criticized Arnold Schwarzenegger for saying that he invited the Minutemen to visit California. These are the vigilantes on the border. And also, what Dean's talking about is essentially the Republicans are going to drive a wedge between upper and middle class immigrants and Hispanics, I think even African American communities, between them and the counterparts in the lower end of the spectrum, which are immigrants, people who are making no money, or, you know, just the haves and the have-nots in a lot of different ways. And this is a whole new wedge issue that he thinks is going to be very public.
Well, yeah, and he thinks he's figuring that immigrants don't vote. That's the Trump card.
So we're going to talk about Cindy Sheehan, who is down there doing her the big work for all of us out there outside of Crawford with her bus that says Impeach Bush. We're going to talk to her later in the show, and we're going to give you an update on what's going on there now. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Morning.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. It's Tuesday. Wake up, sheeple. Hope it's okay for you out there today. Be careful. Look, you know, sometimes when you read the headlines, and by the way, just a second before I get into this, Cindy Sheehan living up to her promises from June when she said, quote, "We're watching you very carefully about Bush, and we're going to do everything in our power to have you impeached for misleading the American people, beating a political stake into your black heart will be the fulfillment of my life," end quote. She is down there at day four. Her son, Casey, of course, many of you know, died, was killed in Iraq. She's down there with her bus tour and some support from several other groups demanding that President Bush explain himself and answer for the lies. We'll get into that in just a second. But sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we have the 9 News 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's beat it some headlines. A lot of people enjoyed that live at CBGB's last week.
Yeah.
Here we go. From CNN, Sandstorm disrupts Iraqi constitution writing. Sandstorm disrupts Iraqi constitution writing translation. Bush denounces granules of evil. From the Associated Press, Rice, insurgency losing political steam. Translation, Condi victim of denial virus. I think we got one more read on that. Rice, insurgency losing political steam. Translation, here's a new one. Bin Laden tightens donations for insurgents, shifts more cash towards GOP. Yeah. All right, here we go. From the Associated Press, crude oil prices hit record $63 a barrel. Crude oil prices hit record $63 a barrel. Translation, president's plan to stop global warming finally unveiled. That's a clever one. That's one of them clever jokies. All right, so let's set a stage here before we get into exactly Cindy Sheehan down there and the groups rallying with her, which include her group, Gold Star Families for Peace. She was one of the founders of that. We got Veterans for Peace down there. Military Families Speak Out is down there. Iraq Veterans Against the War is down there. Code Pink down there. And Crawford Peace House. Also, Little Alpha, the ranch with Cindy Sheehan in this protest, which is picking up a lot of momentum, certainly on our air and a little bit in the mainstream media, as they call it. But let's just talk for a second about what the truth is. The truth about how the American people are feeling about this war. Okay, this is there are new polls out that 61%. Disapprove of how Bush is handling Iraq. That is the lowest approval rating since the start of the war by 7 percentage points. That's a big deal. Okay, 64% believe that the war has not made us any safer from terrorism. That is the lowest approval rating of his presidency by 10 percentage points. His overall approval rating is crap.
Yes, and when it comes to his honesty, and this is an important one. According to an AP Ipsos poll
today,
his honesty rating, in other words, the percentage of people who say that they consider him to be honest, has gone from 53% in January to 48% today. And that's 50% saying he is not honest. And a public opinion analyst at the American Enterprise Institute, by the way, this is a very conservative think tank, American Enterprise Institute. This is a quote. Whether you agree or disagree with him, the president has taken a pounding on perceptions of his honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that goes back to weapons of mass destruction. That goes forward to, the statements that are coming out of not just Bush, but others in his administration, that the Iraq insurgency is losing steam, even as more and more American troops wind up dead. There is just everywhere you turn with this guy, there is something that people are finding not credible. Let's be nice with it.
Yeah, and I like the way they phrased it in this poll. In January, 49% saw Bush's confidence as arrogance. Now 56% do.
Yeah.
And confidence as arrogance. That's what that guy is built on, is arrogance. And the thing that frightens me on some level is that his disapproval rating is 51%, which is the lowest approval rating of his presidency. But that there is that... That 51 is still 51. It should be 75. It should be 90. You know what I mean? But it's not.
If it was 75, they'd be drawing up articles of impeachment in the House of Representatives.
Exactly. As I said, it should be 75% disapproval rating. I believe that to be true. And that's what frightens me about these numbers, is that there are still people willing to cling on to a sense of loyalty to this guy that has misled the country, and to believe the crap that comes out of the talking points, you know, and the weird dispersal system of right-wing media to make people, you know, feel comfortable in these opinions that are based in crap.
Well, see, part of what's going on here, Mark, is the whole notion that this is one of these affable, backslapping guys. They see him with various world leaders. They see him with Putin from Russia. They see him with Prince Bandar. They see him with various and sundry figures in his administration. And he comes across to people as a regular guy, as an affable guy. Now, I've never personally found him to be affable. I've just found him to be more sinister.
Smug,
but sinister.
Yeah.
There's a sinister aura to this guy
that
most people don't see.
Well, no, I think some people, sort of tough love fans, fans of quick talk and straight shooting these people. I'm not. It's a certain type of person that likes his attitude, that likes the cockiness. If Bush was cocky in a situation where he didn't have the backup of the U.S. military, of the entire forces at his control as president, if he was just a guy in a bar, he would get his lunch fed to him.
He would.
And, you know, and he's a pretty charming guy on some level, but he would certainly, you know, he's just a smart ass, and I'm surprised he hasn't got his ass kicked. And I think one of the reasons is because, you know, he comes from such a privileged background, such a spoiled background. This is a guy that's never been told no about anything. He's always gotten everything he wanted.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes counter, I would think, to some of those people that are fans of his tough love bullcrap. You know, here's a poll that frightens me a little bit here. It frightens me in the sense that in Bush's handling of terrorism and Homeland Security, that he's got an approval rating of 51%.
That's always been his strong suit, you know.
Right. But that's still, it's the lowest approval rating of his presidency by 6 percentage points, but it's still high. And that coinciding with, you know, how likely is it that Islamic extremists will carry out major terrorist attacks against U.S. interests? Very likely, 45% of the people said very likely, 37% said somewhat. So that's, a lot of people believe we're going to be attacked, and a lot of people believe that he's handling terrorism and Homeland Security well. Now, that doesn't, you know, bode well in terms of, you know, really, you know, showing that his popularity is as crappy as you would think, mm-hmm. because there are still frightened people. There are still people that think something bad is going to go on, and they mistakenly think that he is handling terrorism and anti-terrorist momentum in a beneficial way, and I don't think so.
Well, what happens is every day there's not an attack inside the U.S., those people who think that he's doing a good job say, point to that as an example. Well, we haven't been hit since 2001.
Mm.
The Londoners have been hit. Spain's been hit. This place has been hit. That place has been hit. But we haven't been hit on American soil. So they give Bush, unfortunately, in my judgment, the credit for us not being attacked, even as those same people believe that eventually we will. Now, that would seem to me to be almost counterintuitive. You give a guy credit for the fact we're not attacked, but on the other hand, you think we are going to get attacked. So who do you blame if we do?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense.
There was a sad, spontaneous duel at a flea market in Floyd County, Kentucky, over the war in Iraq. This was one of those arguments where, you know, you can have arguments about the Iraq war with your friends all you want, but this is one of those things, too. This is the scenario. This should be a movie. I'm not even sure how it should play out, but you got these two guys, they're gun dealers. They're gun vendors at a flea market in Kentucky. They set up next to each other. They know each other for years, okay? They've been firearm vendors there for years. This guy, Douglas Moore, who was 65 years old, and this other guy, Wayne Smith, who was 56, he opposed the war, Wayne did, and Douglas was pro-war, all right? So they had this argument, and guns were drawn.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-war guy
lost the duel.
The anti-war guy got shot, and the weirdest thing about it is this: he died, and I don't want to make light of that. Okay, but it's a horrible thing. But the whole thing played out. It couldn't be made up, you know. I mean, this guy, Douglas Moore, he's a retired railroad worker. He said, "Quote: I'm sorry that this happened, but then what's done can't be undone." Unquote. Moore said he thinks Smith and his family knew him well enough to, quote, know that what my thoughts are. His family does, because me and Harold was friends. That's all I'll say, end quote. So he and Harold was friends.
Yes.
And he shot this guy, and he's assuming that the family understands that this was just, you know, this was bound to happen. I don't know.
And he's a free man.
He's a free man.
He's on the street.
He's a free man because he said that it was self-defense.
It was self-defense.
And witnesses actually said, there was this weird tone of like, well, he clearly outdrawed him.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? You know, if he had been a little quicker, it would have went another way. But, you know, they had, obviously, it was handled with a certain amount of decorum, as a couple of gun dealers would handle things. You know, I don't know if they talked about it before, but there were no semi-automatic weapons. There was drawing involved. It's a sad, horrible thing. And the weird thing to me is that this guy, Harold, who am I talking about now? The Douglas Moore.
Yeah.
Said that, you know, he was talking about the Iraq War. The argument was around how the guy who was anti-war was saying that it's horrible that these 14 soldiers had gotten killed. That was last week when all those 14 got killed at once. And the argument from the pro-war guy was essentially like, well, 14 people die on our highways all the time. That type of thinking, you know, that dismissal of the difference between why and how people die and what it means when a human death happens is frightening to me, because I think that has implications that spread throughout the pro-war ideology, that, like, you know, they can rationalize somehow that over 1,800 kids have been killed.
Yeah, they find some way, and they, well, 1,800 people have been killed on American highways. What I don't understand, how does this, all right, let's say you have heated words over the war in Iraq. How does it escalate to a physical fight And then how does it escalate to drawing guns, for God's sake?
Well, that's easy. They're all sitting there. They're selling them. There's guns all around them. They're like, you know.
All right.
But they're right there. The gun's right there.
I know, but if they had gotten into a beef and they had no guns, would somebody have jumped in their car and ran the guy over or something?
No, but, I mean, apparently some attorney thinks this is the first time that this has ever happened over the Iraq War, and I imagine that that's probably true.
Yeah.
But the whole tone of it, that like it seemed like this was bound to happen with these two guys at some point.
It's weird.
It should be a TV show. I'm pitching a show. Two gun dealers at a flea market in Kentucky. How hilarious is that?
You have one episode.
Yeah. I have one episode?
That's right. The guy would be shot in
that. I have the last episode, apparently. It's the episode. But you get into their life a little bit. You get into the flea market thing. I'm telling you, there's a show there. Let's get to a real struggle being fought on behalf of dead Americans in Iraq. Cindy Sheehan is outside of the Crawford Ranch, waiting to talk to President Bush. We're going to update you on that, who's involved, what other groups have gone down, where it stands. There's word that she might be arrested on Thursday. We'll get into that. So stay here. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Cindy Sheehan, the father of fallen soldier Casey Sheehan. And a growing number of supporters are gathered just outside of Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas, where they marched from their protest convoy headed by a red, white, and blue bus with impeachment tour written on the side. She has demanded that Bush account for his abysmal handling of the war in Iraq and the death of her son. We will get into that in just a second here. But first, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Scientists conducted the first of six harmless gas terrorism training drills in New York City. So far, the results of the test reveal that in the event of a terror gas attack, you probably shouldn't be anywhere in the city. New Yorkers reacted the same way they always do to any strange gas by saying, "I'm not giving you any money," and walking on without making eye contact. That's a little weird joke. Fewer than half of all Americans believe President Bush is honest. A solid majority still see Bush as likable and a strong leader, but then a solid majority also think Dick Cheney played the Maytag repairman throughout the 70s. Experts say the dip in credibility comes at least partly from Bush's inaccuracies with Iraq, such as when he said it had weapons of mass destruction, that the war would be over in a matter of months, and that it is located just 4 miles outside of Chicago. A billboard for a pizza shop in New Zealand has a picture of Bush on it with the phrase, "evil bastard." The ads were immediately condemned by the Swift Boat Veterans for Pizza Truth. The pizzeria stopped trusting Bush shortly after he failed to end the war in Iraq in 30 minutes or less. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Those are funny, man. What were you working on, Chris? What were you working on over there?
Other things, buddy.
Yeah, okay, man, that's okay. There's no reason to pay attention because I'm sure. What are you landing the shuttle?
Is that what? Yeah, that is what.
Is that
doing.
What Chris has got? Like his computer's going. He's working on the IM. You landing the shuttle? What time is it landing? You don't know? Go ahead and answer.
I have three screens to work on here.
All right. Well,
I don't have time for your little.
Can we get the astronauts up on the screen so we can talk to them from ground control, Kalo, Costco, iPod Ho? And so they're supposed to land now. They've pushed off the landing that was supposed to happen at 6:40 something.
6:43. It's now 8:12 Eastern time, and there's a window. Yeah, the second opportunity if the first one doesn't work is for, I believe, 9:47. Now, Edwards, apparently the weather at Edwards is fairly good, so they probably would not need a second pass if they go to Edwards. There's still an outside chance if something goes wrong at Edwards, they'd have to go to White Sands, New Mexico.
And then, which is the last case scenario. They don't like it because it gets little grits of white sand in the cracks and crevices of the shuttle. They did it once, and they're still trying to pick little pieces of sand out of there. So let's talk about the brave and inspired and completely... This is a great protest. Cindy Sheehan is doing a great thing, and she is being supported by her group, Gold Star Families for Peace. She's being supported by Veterans for Peace, by Military Families Speak Out, by the Iraq Veterans Against the War. Code Pink is down there. Crawford Peace House is down there with her. There's a growing number of people that are about 5 miles outside of the Crawford Ranch. Local authorities have stopped them there, and she's demanding to talk to President Bush. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley and Deputy White House Chiefs of Staff Joe Hagan met with Sheehan for 45 minutes. I guess that was yesterday.
No, I think it was Saturday afternoon.
Saturday afternoon, yeah. Which means that she's gotten people a little nervous. Obviously, the press attention, obviously the feelings behind this are real. They're credible. They're coming from a woman who lost a son. They're coming from a woman who's been critical of this administration before. She gave one of the great quotes.
Yeah.
That we've had on our show. This was back in June in a letter that she wrote. Cindy Sheehan said, quote, "We're watching you very carefully, and we're going to do everything in our power to have you impeached for misleading the American people. Beating a political stake into your black heart will be the fulfillment of my life," end quote. Now, there's been some talk, Riley, she may be arrested on Thursday.
There's a possibility. Right now, that is not, there's no credible, in other words, nobody from the Bush administration has said categorically that they're going to arrest her. Thursday is when Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice pay a visit to Crawford. And there was some speculation on people's parts that, because of some of the moves that they've made over the last couple of days, trying to proscribe the area where she can actually legally stay near the ranch, that they may decide to call her a national security risk and therefore arrest her the day that Rumsfeld and Condi are supposed to be coming by.
Sounds like a scare tactic to me. Now, we're going to be talking to Cindy Sheehan in just a little while here on Morning Sedition, and
yes,
see, so we can get an effective and, you know, real update on what's going on down there. But I'll tell you, the right-wing smear on Sheehan from Drudge was pretty nasty. They're criticizing her for being, you know, gracious during a short condolence meeting with the president 2 months after her son was killed.
I said this yesterday, this was going to happen.
Yeah, and now they're saying, well, she changed her mind, she flip-flopped. It's like, dude, that was like 2 months after her son was killed. She was being respectful of the president just because he was a president, and
yeah,
that she would, you know, he was telling her things that she wanted to hear at the time. And now, over time, she's realized that he was lying, that there was a tremendous misdeeds and evil malfeasance at the core of the reasons we went to Iraq. And she has changed her mind based on facts, based on feelings, based on educating herself, and based on her anger. And that is completely legitimate. The idea that the right wing smear mobile, the right wing smear dispersal units like Drudge would even think of discrediting this woman for acting respectful around a president, which is something they can't even act respectful around somebody who lost their son. These bastards have no shame.
You know, Cindy Sheehan, it strikes me, Mark, is treating the death of her son much as the way someone would treat a murder victim. Someone who wants answers as to how their son or their daughter perished. And she's demanding those kind of answers from an administration that has been very, very parsimonious, is that the right word?
With
truth,
I like,
about what's going on in Iraq.
Right. Well, we are going to talk to Cindy Sheehan in just a few minutes, if you'd like to stick around to hear what she's at personally, as opposed for us.
Never mind that. You better stick around.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. We're also going to talk to Cy Hirsch about Abu Ghraib. Cy Hirsch, of course, the guy who broke the story on Abu Ghraib, and has new information for us. That's all coming up in the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark, and that's Mark. Stay with us.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah. 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. How are you? It's Tuesday. Wake up, sheeple. Philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. We are about to get Cindy Sheehan on the phone. She is down there in Crawford, Texas, with her bus that says Impeach Bush. She's down there with several other groups rallying, demanding that George Bush come out and explain himself herself and this war and the death of her son. The people who are out there with her, Veterans for Peace, military families speak out, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Code Pink is down there, Crawford Peace House, Gold Star Families for Peace, of course, is Cindy Sheehan that helped create that organization. We'll be talking to her in just a few minutes. You can join us, Morning Sedition, this Friday when we broadcast live from O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia and food critic Ed Levine will be there to hang out. We'll have free coffee and some giveaways and that kind of stuff. It's a new neighborhood for us. Yeah. That's O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. Want to thank the people of Seattle, especially the people that came down to Giggles. A lot of Morning Sedition fans, Mark Riley.
Yeah, you said that there were a lot of folks, and especially Ryan from Everett, who was wonderful.
People giving us presents. I got a couple of pens for you that were in a gift pack from Roxy, our pharmacist.
Oh, great.
She was up all
great.
Night. Yeah, I got. She had the. I don't know if she put them in there on purpose, but they were those kind of pens that you like.
Oh, great.
So the shuttle is supposed to land at, what, 8:12 this morning?
8:12 this morning Eastern Time at Edwards Air Force Base in the Mojave Desert in California.
This is a second try. They ditched the first landing possibility down at Cape Canaveral in the 6 o'clock hour. Now it looks like they're definitely going to land 8:12. They got to land the damn thing because they don't have a lot of gas. Our next guest lost her son Casey in Iraq. She's been camped out 5 miles from Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas, since Saturday, waiting to speak to the president. So far, he hasn't come out to talk to her. Cindy Sheehan joins us on the phone from Crawford, Texas. Good morning, Cindy. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Okay.
We're good. How are you holding up, more importantly? What's it like down there? Everything going okay? You still waiting? Any word?
I'm still waiting. No word. It's pouring down rain right now, and this is the weather. It's either pouring down rain with thunder and lightning, or oppressively hot. And but our spirits are really, really good. The people of the country, the people of the world, the outpouring of support and love that everybody's been sending us, and actual physical items. It has just been really amazing, but not surprising to us. And
how many
and
people?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. How many people are down there with you now? A lot of people coming in every day, more people coming in?
Right, every day more people are coming in. Yesterday, I think we ended up with about 3 dozen people. Not all of them spent the night last night, but we probably had like 20 people spending the night last night. More people, I hear more people are coming around from all over the country. You know, they're coming from California, Maine, Colorado, Ohio, just everywhere, Louisiana, and this is amazing because you guys know that 61-62% of the American public think this war is a mistake and they want the troops home, and I think our action out here has given these people a voice.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It's given them a chance to physically show that they are opposed to this war. And, you know, the American public, an overwhelming majority is opposed to it.
Yep.
We just have to get the government, we have to get Congress to catch up with us. And this is a way for us to visibly show Congress that we want the killing to stop.
Cindy Sheehan, there have been numerous reports that we've seen here in New York that speak to the possibility of you being arrested as a national security threat. What can you tell us about that? Have you heard those same stories, and where are they coming from?
We heard from one of the state legislators in Texas yesterday that the plan is right now they're letting us stay there because of the First Amendment. You know, we have the freedom of speech and we have the freedom to peaceably assemble. And but on Thursday, for some reason on Thursday, we're going to become a security threat to the president. And then if we don't leave, we're going to be arrested.
Well, isn't that
and
reason?
I'm going to tell you, they're going to have to carry me to a squad car because I'm not leaving. If George Bush thinks that he can intimidate me, I want to tell him I have more courage in my little finger than he has in his whole body. And my son had more courage in one cell of his body than George Bush has my son had more courage than his whole administration has. And if he thinks he's going to intimidate me and frighten me into doing something that I know is wrong, then, you know, he better think again.
Those are. It's great to hear you say that, Cindy. We're certainly supporting you here at Air America.
We're really grateful for that.
I think that one of the reasons they want to consider you a national security threat is Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice are supposed to be there in Crawford, I think, Thursday afternoon for a fundraiser on Friday.
And he has to drive by us on Friday to get to his fundraiser.
You got the bus out there?
Yeah, because the fundraiser is at a ranch that's below us. So we're in between him and his fundraiser. And you know how much he doesn't like to even realize that there's people who disagree with him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to have to go by all these people who not only disagree with him, you know, they're violently opposed to anything that he stands for.
So, Cindy.
Not violently. I don't want to say violently.
Okay.
Because we're peaceful.
We'll raise
it. The only threat we are to him is to his image and credibility.
Sure. We are mentally, imaginingly violent.
Yes.
Okay. So, Cindy, now let's say that the convoy, that Bush's motorcade stops, he gets out of the car, he steps right up to you. What will you say to him?
First of all, that's going to be probably hell would have frozen over, but I will say to him, number one, you say my son died for a noble cause. Tell me that noble cause, and please don't lie to me. If you even start to say freedom and democracy, this conversation is over. And number two, I want to ask him, if it's such a noble cause, has he encouraged his daughters to go over there and take the place of two soldiers who want to come home, who have been stop-loss, who might be on their third tour of duty, you know, that are being held hostage there against their wills? And then number three, I would ask him to quit saying we have to honor the sacrifices of our fallen heroes and complete the mission, because you guys know they have no idea what the mission is. And the only way that I want my son's sacrifice to be honored is by bringing the rest of the troops home. And I don't want him to exploit my son's honor and integrity to continue his murderous policies in Iraq.
That's great. I think that's a great conversation we had. Now, he's lied to you once before, hasn't he?
Well, he's lied to everybody.
Right.
You know, I'm not special. He's lied to the whole world.
Right, but when you had a meeting with him way back a couple months after Casey was killed, you had a brief conversation with him, and over time your opinion of him has devolved and become, obviously more clear and more aggressive and critical, which is beautiful. But, you did have that moment with him because, it just infuriates me that they're trying to characterize they're trying to characterize you as having some sort of, change of heart, or that you're not being, true to your original statements, which
right.
were done right after your son was killed. I mean, how could your feelings have not have changed?
But I just think, Mark, it's so amazing to me that this media, the mainstream media, and especially the far right media, that they can so assiduously scrutinize the words of a mother who was deeply in grief and deeply in shock. So a mother who's, who had a son stolen from her.
Mm-hmm.
I have had Casey's future stolen from me, and Casey had his future stolen from him. They can scrutinize that so carefully, but they couldn't have scrutinized what the president and his administration was saying in the lead up to this war. You know, if the media had done their job, and I'm talking about the mainstream media and the right-wing media, then my son may still be alive.
Right, absolutely. Hey, we've got a call of someone reaching out here in California, Cindy Sheehan. Let's, Shane, listening to XM, how are you? What's up?
Hi.
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Cindy, first off, I wanted to give you a tremendous thank you. The only way this man will ever be held accountable is if there's intense public pressure. And I just wanted to thank you for being the spark to start the fire under him.
And
I
don't know what to thank. You know, we're just doing what we have to do.
Right, I understand. I just had one question for you. Everybody listening to the show this morning, what can those of us that cannot come out to Texas and join you in person do from where we are?
That's a really good question.
Thanks, Shane.
Thanks, Shane.
There's a new website up called meetwithcindy.org, and it has a link to the Crawford Peace House. The Crawford Peace House is providing logistical support to us. they operate on a shoestring budget, and I think it's really amazing to me that there is a peace house in Crawford, and they need to be supported monetarily. And also Gold Star Families for Peace, we need to be supported monetarily because we're trying to get as many of our members out here as possible. So people could go to our website, www.gsfp.org. That's Gold Star Families for Peace. That's gsfp.org.
Okay.
You know, other ways to support us is just keep pressure on the media to keep covering us because, you know, they have such a short attention span. And it's amazing to me that they're coming out and they're acting like this was the first action I've ever done. You know, I've been working for peace for a year, and I'm very well known in the progressive circles and the peace circles, but these mainstream media, they're acting like I just, you know, came out of the woodwork one day and decided to do this.
Well, Cindy,
you know, this was a spur-of-the-moment action, but I've been working at this for months and months now.
Yeah, and we're glad that you are. We're really, you know, we're just in awe of your courage on this, and I think it's a great thing you're doing, and maybe we'll check in with you tomorrow.
Oh, I hope so. You know, I'm going to hopefully be out here for a long time.
Okay, Cindy. It was great talking to you. Take care of yourself today.
Thanks, Cindy.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You, so much.
You bet. Cindy Sheehan out there a few miles outside of Bush's ranch waiting for the president to show his evil face so she can have a few words with him. Coming up in a second, we've got Cy Hirsch. So you want to stay with that. He's going to give us a little more insight into Abu Ghraib and why, again, that the mainstream media didn't, why that thing didn't, you know, take some real, why didn't Rumsfeld go down for that? Why didn't anybody go down for Abu Ghraib? Seymour Hirsch will discuss that with us. It's 18 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Morning'sEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. Morning'sEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hirsch, who's going to join us by phone, and he's the author of Chain of Command, The Road from 9/11 to Abu Ghraib, which is now available in paperback. You know, he was the one that broke the story about Abu Ghraib and the pictures in the New Yorker magazine, and he's one of the only guys out there doing the real work.
He doesn't play. Cy Hirsch don't play.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. You know, his original story was he broke the My Lai story, right?
He got a Pulitzer Prize for the My Lai massacre work back in the early 1970s.
Well, listen to this. I've got some. This is sort of a weird story. Not even weird because they did some scientific research there, Chris and Mark. I'm just going to let you know. Men have an excuse now. Apparently, women's voices are more difficult for men to listen to than other men's. This is a report. I'm not making this up, all right? Researchers at Sheffield University in Northern England discovered startling differences in the way the brain responds to male and female sounds. Men deciphered female voices using the auditory part of their brain that processes music, while male voices engaged a simpler mechanism. What mechanism is that? Just like, you know, not music, just sort of gruntings. Or yeah, I don't know what the other part of the brain is. A researcher said, quote, the female voice is actually more complex than the male voice due to the differences in the size and shape of vocal cords and the larynx between men and women. Also due to women having greater natural melody in their voices, man.
Hi, Mark.
See, that just went right to my male part. I knew you were faking. I went right into the male part of my brain.
Because I did my turn as Norma Desmond in Morning's Edition Radio Theater, and I ended up sounding like that for a couple of seconds.
Well, this is very interesting, because I guess that means that can provide you with a different excuse if your wife or your significant other, if she is a woman, says, are you listening to me? You should just say, I'm just enjoying the tone of your voice.
Yeah.
It sounds like music.
You
to
sound
me,
like
baby.
Beethoven.
Yeah, even when you're yelling, yeah, that'd be the more intense movement. Of
yeah,
it.
It's true though. When I was a kid, I used to always kind of tune out my mother and always kind of listen to my father.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was more authority.
Well, you generally listen to the guy that's hitting you. You know.
Actually, surprisingly enough, my mother hit me a lot, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My mother hit me, too. My father only did that. I can count the number of times on one hand my father hit me. My mother used to beat me all the time.
But when my dad beat me, that's when it really hurt. My mom was like, oh, all right, that kind of hurts. My dad, no, he really laid into it.
I didn't get hit a lot, and it was sporadic, and it had no real, it wasn't based on anything. There was no consistency to the discipline. It was kind of, it was kind of impulsive and came at weird times over stupid stuff. There was no structure to the discipline. If you're going to hit your kid, which I don't think you should do, but it should be, for reasons other than where's my, where's the good screwdriver? It should be for reasons, other than, are you looking at me funny? You know what I mean? Those aren't reasons to discipline. Then it's an unstable kind of thing, and it didn't happen very often.
Beat down once by my father for kicking him. Oh, this was like 6-7 years old.
Well, that was self-defense thing, Riley. He had,
Why were you kicking him?
No, well, because I was on the floor, and he was looming over me about something. Because he was getting ready to hit me, I could tell.
Yeah.
And I just kicked at him, and that, infuriated him. I got a serious beat down.
In a related story to this... to the tone of women's voices being, registered as music rather than, shrill, annoying, demands. A Macedonian.
Well, you're going to hear from the female half of management down at 641 6th Avenue that one.
I don't want to be sexist or judgmental. My wife is not demanding. She does not annoy me. I try to listen to her. My wife presents things as if I'm listening to a newscast. That's how my wife. Well, I don't know. She when she has information, she says, well, according to this survey, she'll actually say things like that in conversation. It's hilarious. It's like sometimes I'm listening to her, I'm like, is there a camera on? Wait. But anyways, a Macedonian man forgot his wife at a gas station and only realized he split without her 6 hours later.
I hate it when that happens.
Apparently someone wasn't listening at all. They were traveling with their daughter, their 4-year-old daughter. Oh, he didn't know. He didn't know she was gone.
Hold up!
Yeah. His excuse was she usually sits in the back seat with the kid, and he just didn't notice for 6 hours. I think that he knew. He planned to leave her. Finally.
Did he give her the ID? A couple of lira, maybe?
So we've got Seymour Hersh coming up. We've got Morning Remembrance coming up. There's a lot of things to stay around for. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Stay tuned for Morning Remembrance. That's coming up momentarily right now. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. He's been a staff writer for The New Yorker since 1993. He's the author of Chain of Command, The Road from 9/11 to Abu Ghraib, now out in paperback. Please welcome journalist and author Seymour Hersh to the show. Good morning, Seymour.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's get right to it. How surprised are you that nobody of consequence, specifically Donald Rumsfeld, Stephen Cambone, any of the guys that were at the top of command in this have been taken to task or held responsible for Abu Ghraib?
Oh, I guess in a perfect world, I would love to see it. If we were living in Plato's Republic, I would say it should go to the top, and I'd even take it, above Cheney, obviously. But the answer is not very surprised, and, we've had a complete collapse of the normal. What's happened since the story became known, last year, last spring, is there's been left the 10 internal investigations by the Department of Defense, all of which were precluded from looking at the chain of command. And then we had the famous United States Senate Armed Services Committee investigation. And so I'm one of those people that can't decide on any given day whether the U.S. Senate is supine or prone. They've done an unbelievably bad job. They've not looked at it. Of course, you're dealing with Republican. You don't have Democrats in the committee.
So if this were another time, this thing, it seems to me that with all the evidence that you put together and just, the indictment and the pictures themselves, if this were another time, so if this was the era of My Lai, would this thing have, garnered enough momentum to take these guys down?
Well, I hate to get nostalgia for the Nixon years, but in those years, the fact is after My Lai, there was an incredibly thorough a sophisticated investigation led by a three-star general named Ray Pierce called the Pierce Panel that got some very tough findings.
Mm-hmm.
And they prosecuted senior officers. They dropped them. You know, here's what you need to know about this case. All you need to know about the chain of command and responsibility is this. The war starts in the spring of 03. In the summer, it's going great. He lands on the carrier, the president does, victory is declared. In the fall, the insurgency began. It starts looking bad. The UN's blown up. This is 2 years ago. After the UN goes up, we have no intelligence. We start squeezing the prisoners in Abu Ghraib and other places in Iraq. The fun and games that we saw, the photographs of the naked people and all that junk that we saw, starts around September. It goes for 4 months until one of the kids inside has enough integrity and decency to send a CD to the Army investigators, the cops, the criminal investigation.
Yeah. System.
They begin an investigation. We know from the pathetic investigations done by the Senate, Rumsfeld testifies, that within a few days in January, this is early January, 04, he learns about it. He tells the president within 2 days. They don't look at the pictures, but they know how bad it is. And then what happens? And this is what I couldn't see this when I originally wrote this book. This is stuff I wrote about, I write about in the afterword.
Yeah.
A postscript, sort of. You don't see, it's hard for journalists to write what doesn't happen. We only write what happens.
Yeah.
From January, once the president knows about it, to May, when I write about it in the New Yorker, CBS puts out some photographs, et cetera, and the story balloons all over the world. From those 3.5-4 months, what did the president do when he knew about it? And the answer is nada, nothing.
Yeah.
He didn't say to Rumsfeld, hey, what's going on here, Don? Let's get some. They did nothing except begin the process to start charging a couple of the enlisted people. And so now you have 7 enlisted people who've either pled guilty or been found guilty. And what do you have? If you take a look at the record, the idea of nudity, stripping prisoners, isn't just in Iraq. We now know it's in Guantanamo. We now know it's in Afghanistan at Bagram prison there. And so what do you have? You have a collective sense, that there's clearly some sort of overriding pattern, nudity, humiliation, that played out viciously in Abu Ghraib, but wasn't limited to Abu Ghraib. How can you not but conclude this is a high-level idea?
Well, what do you think the reason, Seymour Hersh, is for nothing happening in terms of, is it because that we don't have any Democrats that are willing to really, you know, be vocal? Is it because of the media? Is it because the public just doesn't see this as a transgression?
Well, you know, we have no moral leadership. I think the public sees what it sees. I think the public, I think even in the red zones, after I did the book last year, I did a lot of interviews in Texas and other places. Everybody knows, you know, they can say all you want, you shouldn't do this, it's bad, everybody does it. But the bottom line is a lot of shame in America about the way we treated our prisoners. I guarantee you, I had an Israeli tell me once, a very tough Israeli, who served as a prison guard, say to me, you know something? He said, Hersh, he said, I hate Arabs, I hate Palestinians, but someday we're going to have to live, share a border with those no-goodniks. And if we had treated our Palestinians in prisons the way you treated your Arabs, we couldn't have lived with them. You can't humiliate an Arab this way. They will get revenge. This is society built on shame. And so, I think the answer is, talk about lack of moral leadership among the Republicans. I don't see a former President Clinton attacking the war. I don't see the Democrats saying anything other than, well, we can't pull out now. I don't see anybody saying we got to get out of this mess before we get more killed and kill more. It's an unending game that has no end in sight. We're going to lose. We've been losing steadily. There's no way to pull out of this. The only thing that's going to save us is they're going to drive us off, I guess. The idea of some nirvana, democratic nirvana, even the most serious neocon doesn't articulate anymore. The hope is to patch something together. The other thing that's stunning about this is this war has gone on longer than World War II.
Incredible. Seymour Hersh, you knew Donald Rumsfeld from the 1960s. You've known Scooter Libby for a long time. You've known a lot of these players outside the context of the war in Iraq and Abu Ghraib and all that. What was it, because I read somewhere that you really kind of liked Donald Rumsfeld up to a point.
Donald Rumsfeld was smart. He was quick. He was always a good Republican, but he was funny. He does an imitation of Sandy Berger once that was make you laugh for everyone. Sandy Berger was the National Security Advisor for Clinton, and his ponderousness. I don't recognize this guy. Scooter Libby, Lewis Libby, the chief of staff for Cheney, the guy that's been named in the Roe investigation, I knew as a very high-quality lawyer. I first met him maybe 15 years ago. And during the Clinton presidency, Scooter was practicing law here in Washington, a suburb tax lawyer, very fine guy to go argue politics with, argue foreign policy with.
So where'd they go wrong?
Well, I think, you know, it's a great question. I think you have to say to yourself, the ultimate question you really have to ask is, how did 8 or 9 neoconservatives, guys who are out there baying on the right all during the 80s and 90s about, you know, the Middle East, for whatever reason, the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls, extreme Republicans, how did they take over? And what does it say about our society, our democracy? How fragile is our democracy that 8 or 9 neocons could come in and take over a government the way these guys took it over, with all of the policies across the board, no arms control, no Kyoto international ecology agreements, environmental agreements. I mean, these guys have diminished everything in this country, and not only in foreign policy, domestically. So what about our society? What happened to the bureaucracy? What happened to the press? What happened to our military? What happened to the Congress?
Can you answer at least two?
You know what? I'm going to be doing another book. I'll try and answer one half of one.
All right.
Seymour Hersh, you wrote what I think was a very trenchant piece about the United States' involvement in seeking potential targets inside of Iran. The Bush administration tried to discredit that particular piece, but I got to ask you, do you still think that the United States is running such covert missions to identify nuclear and other targets inside of Iran as you first reported?
Yep.
Is that all we're going to say on that?
Well, the problem is it's very tough to write about ongoing operations as
right.
a journalist, because I don't like to jeopardize, you know. Look, it's not as if our guys, you know, cross the border from, let's say, Afghanistan or even Iraq into Iran, you know, marching in single file in uniform playing Yankee Doodle Dandy. You know, we go in under deep cover and we use surrogates. But are there operations being done in the name of America by foreign countries and foreign people, including some of our very good special forces? Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, doing stuff. But let's just stand, there's a lot of stuff being done in Iran. We haven't given up the ghost yet.
So, Seymour Hersh, in the new book, there's obviously an afterword that's different than the hardback cover. And how about, are we ever going to know, and is there any in the new edition of Chain of Command, how bad it was in Abu Ghraib? Is there worse stuff that hasn't been unveiled by you or by anybody that we need to know about?
Well, you know, the federal government, the American Civil Liberties Union, has one court permission under Freedom of Information was granted access to the files, the same photographs that many members of Congress were shown at a secret session after Abu Ghraib, including videos, at least 4 videos. And the Department of Defense, with all of the ranking people, General Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who's known colloquial to many senior officers as "hear no evil, see no evil,"
mm-hmm.
you know, they all argued the file petitions with the federal courts blocking release. And, yes, there's much worse stuff to come.
All right.
I've been told anecdotally. I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, the book is out in paperback, Chain of Command, The Road from 9/11 to Abu Ghraib. Seymour Hersh, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Seymour.
Hey, no question, guys.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a good day. Well, there you go. I hope I'm looking forward to the new book.
Brilliant
now.
Guy, you know.
Yeah, he's
absolutely brilliant guy.
The way he broke it down, just bing, bang, boom. That one, the whole narrative of what led up to it was great. And he's a guy that does the real work. It was a privilege to have him on the show. This was his first time on the show. Stay with us. We've got Morning Remembrance coming up after this. It's 44 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio, Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Yep.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. The shuttle looks like it's still going to land. As far as we know, it's going to land at A-12 down at Edwards Air Force Base.
Edwards Air Force Base.
They missed the Cape Canaveral one because of weather, but we're going to see. We'll know. We're going to be on the air when that's happening. Hey, you know, folks, unfortunately, it's that time of week again when we hear Morning Sedition. Take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our mourning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Morning, guys.
How are you? Okay.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm doing okay.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Richard Nichols, father of the Gilroy Garlic Festival.
Oh.
Richard Nichols, the man responsible for turning Gilroy Garlic Festival from a small neighborhood party into an internationally known source of intestinal gas and bad breath, has died after years of doctors refusing to go near him.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
Getting a little choked up.
A lot of smog today, right?
Invisible gases they're releasing to test the anti-terrorist thing.
Oh, I've heard that, too. I pay attention. I listen to this network.
Good.
This isn't the only thing I do, you know.
I know.
I have a life. I have other things. I have interests.
Yeah? That's good. That's good. I'm glad
among them is getting through this.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and keep that moving?
Okay. Under Nichols' leadership, Gilroy became the garlic capital of the world in the bitter competition that beat out the nearby town of Garlic, which had to settle for onion capital of the world.
Is that true?
No, I made that up. You know what? I'm sorry. I must apologize for that because I'm just high on stevia plus fiber.
Yeah. Stevia is some serious stuff.
Man. Oh, it just sends me woo.
Yeah, I know. Crazy.
During the Vietnam War, Nichols served in the United States Navy, and to this day, it's still the only branch of the military that hasn't been attacked by a vampire. Nichols requested his body be peeled, cut into manageable pieces, and then forced through small holes in the stainless steel squeezing device in order to intensify flavor.
Oh, man. Maybe you ought to boil your nose.
Oh, hey, thanks.
Yeah, buddy.
Is it yours?
No, you can use it. Yeah, it is mine.
Okay, thank you.
Wow. Ooh, you know what? You can keep it.
A little glass of water, too.
Okay. All right. You okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Who we got now?
Jerry Thomas, inventor of the TV dinner. Stick a fork in him, he's done. Jerry Thomas, man who perfected the concept of putting dangerous amounts of fat, sodium, and MSG into aluminum trays and freezing them so a whole generation of children could grow up insane in front of television. Died last month after finally tasting a Swanson Hungry Man dinner.
That's heartbreaking.
It's heart. When doctors finally reached him, witnesses say Thomas was warm on the outside, but still frozen in the middle. It was very frustrating for the doctors.
Oh, no.
Thomas's original aluminum TV dinner can now be seen in the Smithsonian Institution, next to a diorama of the first domestic beating it caused. You cutting chives in here?
We did earlier, so that might be it.
Yeah, it explains it.
Yeah.
In 1999, Thomas was honored for his invention when he was asked to press his hands and TV tray into the cement outside Grauman's Chinese Theater. Paramedics had to be called when Thomas mistook the lukewarm, half-congealed mixture for a pile of Swanson's potatoes and beef gravy.
I like the way you leaned into gravy. That was good.
I love Swanson's potatoes and beef gravy. Gravy.
Yeah, that's good.
The deceased requested his remains be crammed into a metal tray with the foil peeled back and each organ sealed in a separate compartment to avoid mixing the liver gravy with his brain noodles.
Oh, no.
This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying,
who's chopping onions? Oh, man. Thanks, Mort.
Wow.
That was some deep stuff. You never enjoyed a TV dinner? I got pretty excited about tater tots, and I like the... I think I enjoyed the... what was your favorite one, Chris? Your favorite TV dinner?
It had to be the meatloaf. Oh,
really?
No, no, no. You know what? The fried chicken was great.
You like the fried chicken?
I love the fried chicken.
How about the turkey dinner with the cranberry sauce?
Oh, I hated that one.
Oh, yeah.
And what about the weird brownie, the chocolate goopy brownie? Those are always good. And the tater tots are always pretty exciting.
I never had tater tots. I had the mashed potatoes and corn.
I've had the mashed potatoes with the weird gravy.
And I'd scoop them in. I'd scoop the corn into the mashed potatoes and swirl them around.
Oh, my God. You're a genius.
I know. I was ahead of my time.
You, Mort, anything?
My favorite was the Swanson's fried raccoon.
Oh, sure. That was a regional thing. It was a regional thing.
Yeah,
it
sure was.
Where did you grow up?
Central America.
Where I grew up in the Catskills.
Oh, so that was where they had the raccoon thing.
Yeah.
Wow, right. That's really good improv, man. It's good work. How about you?
Sorry, man. We went right to raccoon niblets.
I mean, that's good.
I never.
We're trying to have a little honest moment here, and we never got
to host short attention span theater. Like,
I don't think you've
done. That was a great opportunity that really allowed you to, you know, practice.
Seems like outside of this, you haven't really done much of anything. Yeah.
I don't think I'm really doing much right now.
You want to play games?
With your help.
I'll tell you one thing. A lot of people love you in Seattle. Yeah, I'm serious. I was up there. I did the weekend. I was up at Giggles, you know, and they were asking, where's Jim? And I said, well, he really doesn't do stand-up anymore. Yeah. And, no, but they're a big fan of many of your characters, and your work is appreciated is what I'm saying.
I'm Mr. a very Earl. Powerful man.
You are very, you're extremely very powerful man. And popular with people who like intelligent comedy. Do you see the amount of smoke I'm blowing up your... You know what I mean? Do you know what I'm saying? Why?
Because I know the president. I know the president of this company.
You do? Which one? I think there's three.
He's my uncle.
How many presidents are there in this company?
One's my uncle, the other's my dad, the other's my brother.
Really? And this is the best they could do for you?
I didn't say they love me.
I think they give you a cushier job.
Yeah, right?
So, you know, are you a fan of Bob Mould?
Bob Mould. Woo!
Yeah, he's going to be here in the next hour. That should be exciting. Riley, how about you? Do you ever make your kid eat TV dinners? Does Vivica ever enjoy?
Absolutely not.
Good for you.
Never.
Man. Good for you. My mother, who would spend time at home, just would do it because it was easier. It wasn't a time crunch or anything. She just didn't want to make them. Yours too?
Yeah, of course.
And then they kind of train you to enjoy them to get you excited about these horrendous things because it's supposed to be fun. My mother could never cook. And
see, I'm old enough to remember that this stuff was considered modern. You know, the TV dinner was something new for people.
Astronaut food.
Oh, yeah.
It's 57 past the hour. As I said, Bob Mould will be here in the next hour to jam. We have, what else we got? We've got, you know what? We've got funny things that will happen. Lawton Smalls is going to be here. So stay with us. As I said, 57 past the hour, Mornings Edition with Mark and Mark, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Wake up, sheeple. It's Tuesday. That's right. The shuttle is landing. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor? I know you're out there. And lurking conservatives, of course. Riley, apparently Discovery is on its way down in a safe way as we speak. It's landing at Edwards Air Force Base. And it's happening.
Yeah, it's actually going to be happening in about another 5 minutes or so. They should be on the ground safe back from space.
Yeah.
And that's good news.
And this was a pretty challenging mission. I think they're going to be pretty relieved to be back on this planet. Join Morning's Edition this Friday when we broadcast live from O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia and food critic Ed Levine will be there. We'll have free coffee and other big giveaways. That's this Friday from 6 to 9. At O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. That's a new neighborhood for us there, Riley.
That's right. Moving on up.
I'm looking forward to it. Later in this hour, Bob Mould, formerly of Husker Du, formerly of Sugar, now on his own, has been for a while, is going to play a couple songs for us. What else have we got coming? I just want to toot my own horn again. Today for me, 6 years clean and sober. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's no small deal. That is no small task, my friends. I say that only to encourage other people to get clean and sober. If they're struggling with it, you know what to do. You know where to go. Get it done. Get a new life going for yourself. It's possible. If I could do it, anyone could do it. You know, a day at a time. You know how that goes, don't you? However you need to do it, you should do it, because the clarity of it all. I'll tell you, I was submerged in THC. My brain floating in a pot haze at all times, not to mention the booze and the blow. But that's all behind me for now, and very excited. Feel good, Riley. Thank you.
Yeah, that's good news. That's good news.
That's right. And Chris, of course, Kalo, the Costco ho, enjoying some macaroni salad that I made special for the fellas.
It's just delicious.
I'm like a
some this morning before we went out.
I'm like a den mother. I got home and I went into a crunch because, you know, I was in Seattle on Sunday, and usually Sunday is my cooking day, and right when I got home, I took the red eye and JetBlue. Not bad.
Really?
Not bad at all. I hadn't taken a red eye, and I hadn't taken a red eye since I'd been on this schedule. Since we had so little respect for sleep or the hours of normal people, it doesn't matter, man, when you get to sleep.
Yeah.
And
as long as you do.
I got spoiled, man. I spoiled myself. I bought some of those Bose headphones.
Oh, man, the noise-canceling joints.
The noise-canceling joints with the iPod. Are you kidding me? I don't need anybody anymore, ever. I don't need nothing. I got my Bose noise-canceling headphones and my iPod. I could just float around. I don't need to engage at all.
That's now, awesome. Wait a minute. Did you have mom when the they call them now, flight attendants came by and started asking if you wanted peanuts and stuff?
Oh, yeah. That's all they have on JetBlue. So a weird variety of snacks.
But I mean, could you hear them?
No, I couldn't hear nothing. I had a window seat. I had one of them little neck pillow things, and I just put those on. I leaned into the wall, and I think I went in and out of sleep many times, so it worked out pretty good. And then I put them on again when I was working at home on my computer. They're pretty great. They sound great. I felt kind of bad for spending that kind of dough on a pair of headphones.
Don't feel bad for getting something that, you know, enhances music for you.
There you go. That's a good.
I never feel bad about that, although my wife does.
Well, I'm not going to feel bad. I'm not going to feel bad at all. Hey, you know, we had Cindy Sheehan on our show just a matter of minutes ago.
Yeah.
It was very nice. She's, you know, she's very...
Tough
woman. She's a courageous woman. She's got a decent, interesting sort of warm demeanor about her. She, of course, living up to her promises from June when she said, quote, "We're watching you very carefully. We're going to do everything in our power to have you impeached for misleading the American people. Beating a political stake into your black heart will be the fulfillment of my life," end quote, talking about Bush. She is now down there outside of the Crawford Ranch waiting for Bush to come to talk to her. She has demanded that he come out and talk to her. She's down there with several different groups. She's down there with her group, the Gold Star Families for Peace. Veterans for Peace is down there. Military Families Speak Out is down there. Iraq Veterans Against the War is down there. Code Pink, Crawford Peace House, of course, kind of sponsoring the event in some respects. They are down there. She is the mother of fallen soldier Casey Sheehan, and a growing number of supporters, as I said, are moving towards Crawford. She has met with National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley and Deputy White House Chief of Staff Joe Hagan, but not with Bush. She wants to meet with Bush, and in our conversation, she had this to say.
"They're going to have to carry me to a squad car because I'm not leaving. If George Bush thinks that he can intimidate me, I want to tell him I have more courage in my little finger than he has in his whole body, and my son had more courage in one cell of his body than this whole administration has. And if he thinks he's going to intimidate me and frighten me into doing something that I know is wrong, then he better think again."
That was Cindy Sheehan today on our show talking to us from Crawford, Texas, where she is staked out with a group of others. They are waiting for Bush to come and talk to them.
They want, and see,
it's great.
It is great because it says that one person can, in fact, make a difference if they're dogged, if they're determined, and if they have a very specific goal in mind. This woman, and we should always keep this in mind, she lost a son. You know, it is very, very difficult for men and women to lose someone who, you know, who they brought into the world, who you expect to survive you.
Sure. The shuttle has landed. It seems like everything's okay as far as we know. So there you go. They're back, and they've got their hacksaw with duct tape. And I hope he comes off of the shuttle holding that hacksaw with duct tape that he used to. He actually didn't even have to use it. He just pulled it out with a tweezer, that gap filler that was on those tiles. But they are safely here. If you want to get involved with what Cindy Sheehan is doing and support her in any way, way possible. You can go to meetwithcindy.org, or you can go to www.gsfp.org. The meetwithcindy.org is a link up to the Crawford House, I believe, down there in Crawford, Texas.
Yeah, Crawford House for Peace, I think.
Yeah, and they need support both financially, and maybe you can go down there. Some people seem to be making the pilgrimage to join up with the red, white, and blue bus that Cindy Sheehan drove cross country that says Impeach Bush on it. That's a worthwhile trip. Take a little road trip.
Yeah.
Because apparently they got to drive by him on Friday. There was talk that she might be arrested because of that they were going to accuse her of being a national security threat. That hasn't been validated, but there was talk they're trying to scare her. And also Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice are going to be showing up for a fundraiser on Friday that is at another ranch. So apparently they are going to have to drive by her. Now, the right wing is trying to spin this a little bit because Cindy Sheehan did meet with the president 2 months after her son Casey was killed, and he had offered her condolences, and she behaved respectfully in that meeting with the president. But since then, she has come to be extremely critical, extremely angry, and wants him out because he lied to everybody, and he lied to her. Can we hear that other bit of sound there of Cindy Sheehan on our show just a mere minutes ago talking about that right-wing smear campaign a little bit?
This media, the mainstream media, can so assiduously scrutinize the words of a mother who was, you know, who had a son stolen from her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have had Casey's future stolen from me, and Casey had his future stolen from him. They can scrutinize that so carefully, but they couldn't have scrutinized what the president and his administration was saying in the lead up to this war. You know, if the media had done their job, and I'm talking about the mainstream media, then my son may still be alive.
That was Cindy Sheehan calling us from Crawford, Texas today, where she's, as I said, kind of staked out with some other people, some other groups, waiting to talk to George W. Bush, our, horrendous, heinous president, who she wants to hold accountable. She might call us. We're going to probably check in with her tomorrow or the next day to find out what's going on down here, down there in Crawford with her. So it's down. Discovery is down.
Yes, it has landed. 14 days of testing in space. A lot of anxious moments, I think, for people when yesterday they were supposed to land and they put it off and they told them they had to go for another 24 hours. But they landed in darkness in the Mojave Desert at Edwards Air Force Base, and that was at approximately 8:11 Eastern Time, 5:11 Pacific Time. I guess just as the sun was getting ready to come up over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I am really glad to hear that they're back. I would like to think that, they're going to really start, NASA, that is, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, is really going to start doing a lot of heavy work to make sure that there are no problems in any succeeding flights. Now, I've heard...
Like building a new shuttle, Riley? I mean,
they're talking about that.
Years old.
They're talking about building a new shuttle, but they are also talking about a possible launch sometime in September.
Okay. So, look, folks, the approval rating on a recent poll of Bush's handling of Iraq, 61% disapprove. His overall approval rating is at 51%. So just remember, that means right now, according to these polls from valid polling services, most people don't like our president and most people disagree with him and his war policy. It's 16 past the hour. We're going to talk to Planet Bush correspondent Lawton Smalls in just a few minutes. Stick around for that. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil.
In 3 hours or less,
Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Yo. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. Folks, we're going to have Bob Mould up here not too far from now. And he's, of course, from Sugar Husker Du.
Yeah.
That guy's a power pop wizard, my friends. So look, folks, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone once again is Planet Bush.
Bush.
Wow. Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Who's Bush?
Bush.
Good morning, Mark. You know, you came out of Heaven's Factory with made by God, stamped right on your soul.
All right, okay.
Look
all right.
In there, you'll see
all
it.
Right, I know. I know how you feel about that. Last week, Bush said he thought school kids should learn about Darwin's theory of evolution and this so-called theory of intelligent design side by side, just like they were equal on.
Isn't he something? The things that come out of that man's mouth just takes my breath away.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, me too. So in interest of understanding such an incredibly crackpot, backward, superstitious idea, maybe you should explain intelligent design to me, Lon.
Well, I like it when you use the term intelligent design, Mark. It makes you seem smarter. More hip.
Spit it out, Watton. Come on, let's have
it. Okay, Mr. Rude and Impatient. Intelligent design says that life here on Earth is too complex to have developed through just evolution alone, and therefore an unseen power must have had a hand. And I don't mean Karl Rove. Unseen power.
Unseen power? Come on, Lawton. A professor in Kansas, once dismissed the theory of intelligent design as, quote, if I might quote him, creationism in a cheap tuxedo, unquote, my friend.
Well, I think it's creationism in a pretty nice tuxedo myself. Very sharp, appropriate for all formal occasions.
What's
I'm
wrong?
All for it.
What's wrong with Darwinism? It's been subjected to the highest empirical scrutiny and has been accepted by every serious biologists in the world.
Darwin? Mark, really? Are you sure you want to bring up Darwin?
What?
Are you sure?
What are you...
Darwin. Oh, my. That's so platform shoes and leisure suits.
Oh, come on.
That's over, buddy. All with it, people believe in intelligent design. I thought you knew that. I'm a little embarrassed for you and your Darwin at this stage. You're playing Pong, buddy, and everyone else is playing Halo 2.
No, I'm not going to take this from you. You're the one trying to drag science back into the Middle Ages. You should be embarrassed, Lon.
Okay, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
You can try to keep God out of the room. It won't work. God is the 800-pound gorilla, and he sits where he wants.
Your ancestors, listen to me, buddy. What you're saying is kind of rings true. Your ancestors were gorillas, Lawton.
Oh, descended from monkey
yes,
Mark,
sir. Yes, sir.
Planet of the apes.
Uh-huh.
Darwin,
mm-hmm.
I guess you live in a world of cynical, selfish liberalism long enough.
Whoa.
Everyone's going to start to look like Clyde from Every Which Way But Loose to you, I guess.
Mark, tell me something. What?
Now, truthfully,
yeah.
Can you look at a man like President George W., two terms mandate Bush, and say he came from primates?
Lawton, I can say this as honestly as I've ever said anything in my life. Yes.
Oh, now that just proves my point. Proves my point. I tell you what, life is much too complex for that kind of an answer. That dog won't hunt.
The issue isn't complex, Lawton. It's not complex. You and Bush are just wrong.
What?
You and evangelicals got humiliated at the Scopes trial 80 years ago, and you're still trying to sneak this BS theory that every science in the world is rejected through the back door by calling it something else.
And now that
almost everything Bush touches makes his poll numbers go down, he's just throwing out anything he can and see even if it sticks. Bush has evolved into a lame duck monkey, and you know it, Lawton. You know it.
Monkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been afraid of monkeys ever since I saw The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, here we go.
One of those big flying monkeys carried off Toto.
Yeah, that's it.
Toto.
Yeah.
And the flying monkey looked just like Bush.
Yeah.
I told you.
You
put a vest and a little hat on it could be twins.
Yeah. All right, take it easy, buddy. All right, take it easy. Wow, that's weird. I didn't know you had such a monkey problem. All right, calm down. Pull it together. Wow. That was turned into a monkey.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You all right?
You know, Darwin was gay.
Oh, stop it. Right? That's got to do with
gay
anything.
Gay agenda theory being low-dripped into our children's minds.
You're crazy. Goodbye, Walton. Goodbye.
God made you. Deal with it.
Oh, my God. That guy is too much sometimes.
Wow.
Am I wrong? Too much.
No, you're not wrong.
Very excited. Bob Mould's coming up. That Sugar album. I love that Sugar album. And the old Husker Du album. Nice guy. I've met him once before somewhere else.
Oh, where'd you meet him?
I met him. Where the hell was it? He'd come to a show that I did, and he's a nice guy. I can't remember where the hell the show was.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to remember now, and hopefully I'll remember it later by the time he comes in. So the shuttle is down. Good news, and everything's cool with that. They're safe.
They're safe.
They're on the ground. Let's talk about something real quick here. This Jeanine Pirro, who will take on Hillary Clinton, is an experiment in futility. She's going to go up against Hillary Clinton for the Senate race next election,
next
midterm. But this whole thing, she's a Republican operative. Her husband's a criminal, here in New York City.
A recently released criminal.
Yeah, and she's this is just to try to make Hillary look bad.
Well, it's funny the way this is working out. They were casting around for someone to run against her. The Republican machine here in New York has been in shambles for the last couple of years. They really have not been able to run, other than Pataki, the governor, a credible candidate in a statewide election. And they're serving up Jeanine Pirro, I think, to some extent. And mind you, she still may face a primary against Edward Cox, who is Richard Nixon's son, the late Richard Nixon's son-in-law. She still may face a primary, but I think that the Republicans are behind her because they believe that she can stain Hillary for the run in 2000, for the projected presidential run in 2008.
Yeah, and yeah. she is definitely the front runner for that right now. People think she's it. I don't know myself. We got we got Bob Mould coming up in a few minutes, and also if you're interested, we're going to be at O'Neill's Restaurant on 64th Street here in Manhattan between Broadway and Central Park West this Friday doing a live show. But stay here now for Bob Mould. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley over there.
Hey, where?
Yeah, what?
Maron, Stalker, line one.
Oh, no. All right. How can we get through a day without him? What do you want today, man?
The usual, Mark.
Oh, good.
I want to be the cloud over your head. I want to be the shadow that you fear. I want to be the pin that pops your balloon.
Balloon, huh? All right. Your stalker imagery could use some help, scary boy. What can I do for you today?
Good question, Mark. Here's what can do for me.
Yeah, what?
I'd like you to forward me your schedule.
What are you talking about? What are you, like the world's laziest stalker? I'm not going to give you my schedule.
You see, Mark, take this weekend, for instance. Uh-huh. You just picked up and went to Seattle, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Was that a problem? Did that inconvenience you?
As a matter of fact, it did, Mark. I could have used more notice, like a couple of weeks at least, so I could get a cheaper flight on Orbitz.
Oh, man. This is a money thing again. Maybe you just can't afford to stalk me, buddy.
I could if I had more notice. I tried Orbitz, Travelocity, even Priceline. There was nothing under $600. Unless I transferred in Atlanta and then again in Dallas. I mean, what is that? $600? Ridiculous.
You're like my discount stalker, aren't you? Oh, poor discount stalker.
Are you mocking me, Mark?
Yes, I am.
You're going to be very sorry that you did that, Mark. Very, very sorry.
Okay, look, just to let you know, tonight I'm going to Daniel for dinner. It's probably going to be about $250 a head, so I guess that leaves you out, doesn't it?
I could have a club soda at the bread bar in front. If I sipped it slowly, I could get out for, what, like $12 maybe? It's the tip that kills you at those places.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to let you work out all your budget stuff on your own, so I'm going to hang up now, buddy.
Oh, you think you can just hang up on me, Mark? I hang up on you.
No, okay. Well, look, all right, fine. Go ahead, hang up.
No, you hang up.
No, you hang up.
No, you hang up.
No, you hang up.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Our next guest was the frontman of the 80s band Husker Du and the 90s band Sugar. His influence extends to bands like Nirvana, Green Day, the White Stripes. Now he's an accomplished, my friend, solo artist. His latest solo CD, Body of Song, came out July 26. He's heading out on tour this fall. Welcome to the studio, Bob Mould. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Bob.
Thanks for coming down. Now, I listened to your entire new CD yesterday, and it was interesting because I was listening with a guy who doesn't know your work, and literally you cover the full range of what you're capable of doing, because this guy's sort of like, well, this sounds different than that other one. I like this one better than the other one. There's such a full range here.
Thanks, yeah. I mean, this record has been a little while in the making, and I think over the past year or so, particularly, really started taking a lot of different things I was working on and found, you know, a nice continuous groove to work with. A lot of variety, and I think there's a lot of familiar sounds in there for people, too.
Oh, definitely. You got the big power pop numbers, you got the acoustic numbers, some dance stuff.
Covers a lot of stuff. It's a real nice record, and it's been going real well so far. People have been taken to it, so I'm happy for that.
How long did it take you to make?
I've been writing for this record on and off for about 3-4 years. Did some sessions about 3 years ago in Athens, Georgia. Did a lot of work at home on it. Did some sessions in DC studios over the past year. So yeah, it's nice that it does all tie together.
Can I see something about, you know, when I listen, like, I recently went back, because I knew you were coming on the show, I was excited about it, so I was listening to the first Sugar album, mm-hmm. and I realized that a lot of the pop that's coming out today are really, you know, mimicking you.
Yeah.
Do you get that feeling as well? Do you have resentment or flattery? I mean, how does that make you feel?
Well, when you mentioned my prior work, you know, I think, you know, with Husker Du in the 80s, now it seems history says that informed a lot of things, you know, like the Pixies in particular,
sure.
who are real big again right now.
Yeah.
The Pixies, in turn, seem to have, sort of informed people like Nirvana.
Right.
Nirvana broke about a year before Copper Blue came out. So it's, you know, it was one of those right place, right time things. And then all the fallout through the 90s and, you know, now bands like the Foo Fighters, you know, and that, you know,
right,
Dave
exactly.
was in Nirvana and it sort of sounds like Sugar and here I am again. And it's like everybody's playing hot potato with it or something.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a nice word, informed, though. I don't use that word. That's a more respectful word than ripped off, you bastards.
Yeah, you caught my thing.
You also dabbled in electronic music, electronica and dance music. How did you move from a hardcore band like Husker Du into that idiom?
Well, in 1998, I put out a solo record called The Last Dog and Pony Show, and the premise of the record was, this is the last time I'm going to do this with a loud rock band. I've been doing it 20 years. Everybody else has stolen my sound very poorly. I want to move on to other things. I was living here in New York at the time and just going out a lot to clubs. And, you know, just different. My whole social circle started to change, and it was really the soundtrack to it was dance music at the time.
We're talking to Bob Mould, formerly of Husker Du and Sugar. Now his new solo CD is called Body of Song. You can go to bobmould.com for tour dates and other information. Can we play some songs?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you going to play first?
Let me get check my stuff, and I'll play Paralyzed off the new album.
Bob Mould.
And obvious display of feelings that have dissipated, and I don't have a clue where to start. You wouldn't let me near you, so I settled for the fear that you'd be happy with me 6 feet in the ground, yeah. Oh, well, while I crash when your mood defeats me, so cool the tassels around beneath me, I feel paralyzed most every time you come around and meet me. Stuck in a place that I don't remember. Was it Sunday or last November? I feel paralyzed most every time you come around and meet me. Emotions vaporize, we disappear before my eyes. I wish for things that sadly have come true. So if I tried to make it right, if I found my appetite, I'd eat away at all the pain I seem to bring to you, yeah. While I'm crashing, your mood defeats me. So cool the tassels around beneath me, I feel paralyzed most every time you come around to meet me. Stuck in a place that I don't remember. Was it Sunday or last November? I feel paralyzed most every time come around to meet me. I feel paralyzed most every time you come around to meet me. You paralyze most every time.
Hi. That was Paralyzed off of Bob Mould's new solo CD called Body of Song. Excellent.
Yeah.
Bob's going to stay with us here in the studio. He's going to play another song for us, and he's going to tell us about the years he spent writing for professional wrestling. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
Let's land this thing. It's a morning's edition with Mark and Mark here on Air America Radio. We're talking to Bob Mould, the former frontman of Husker Du and Sugar. His new album is called Body of Song. You can get more info at bobmould.com.
You know, we just heard here in New York that the Attorney General has wheedled $10 million out of Sony in the form of a charitable contribution because apparently they were paying for play.
Yeah.
With local radio stations of virtually every genre.
Yes.
No surprise to you as a person who's been in the business for a minute, right?
No, I'm not so shocked. Well, you know, I think it comes and goes in phases. There was the very early Payless scandals, and then there was, you know, I think people sort of got more aware again in the early 80s. And, you know, it's cyclical. It's always there. I think it's just a matter of how overt it is.
Do you get hurt, though, as an artist? Do you think that maybe someone's paying for a play on a radio station that maybe one of your songs should have gotten?
Well, I just think, you know, I think with, you know, what you guys do here and what people are doing with streaming audio, even down to podcasting, I just think that the field is going to get leveled. You know, I think when the FCC gave sort of that monopoly, so to speak, to a handful of concerns, then people said, oh, all we have to do is get to them. And then it was like lobbyists on the Hill. You know, it's like, well, okay, we can get to them. Then we can set our agenda. Then we've got, you know, that's going to filter out because they control all the stations. I think once you start to break it open and you give people an opportunity, you give people a lot of different channels to find their entertainment, then it's ineffective because then it's sort of like you know, the drunk guy that goes out in the campgrounds and leaves the fire burning too long, and all of a sudden it can spread and, accidentally.
Let's talk wrestling.
Right. Let's talk wrestling.
WCW for a while. Now, you know, wrestling is, I guess, a guilty pleasure of mine. I've been watching it since I was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
What drew you to it? What did you take from it?
I've been a lifelong fan of it. I remember going to the matches up in Montreal when I was a kid. I bought the magazines, read about it, watched it all the time. And then in the 80s, when I was living in Minnesota, I got to be friends with people in the business. They sort of smarted me up to how it worked. I started to work in it, dabble a little bit.
Was that the AWA?
AWA, yeah, Vern Gagne's territory up there. And that was then I got to know some people at World Championship Wrestling in the early 90s. That was Ted Turner's wrestling group. And, you know, I used to give them ideas here and there over like a 10-year period. In September of 99, a position opened up on the creative team. They called and said, do you want to come in? I was off the road just sitting at home writing music, and I said, sure. So it was the craziest 7 months of my life. I mean, you know, 20 years of rock, I'd never seen things that I saw there.
Like what?
Those guys, you know, the physicality of that thing, I mean, those guys are in constant pain all the time.
Well, yeah, we have Mick Foley on the show occasionally, and
yeah.
He talks about how he got lucky in some respects, but a lot of guys are just beaten up.
Yeah, guys, you know, getting joint replacements. I mean, it's a hard life, you know, they're big guys, they're in airplanes all the time. It's a tough life, I feel for them. You know, they party hard.
Yeah,
I mean they're stars. It's, you know, they show up at the hotel, the airport. They're big stars. Everybody wants to do everything for them.
And that's part of the joy and the liability of being a big star of any kind is when someone comes up to you and goes, "You want a party?" You kind of go, "Do you like me?"
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Did they ever? Did any of the wrestlers that you knew ever kick the crap out of some guy in an airport who said wrestling was fake?
No, they just sort of laugh about it. But you know, I've.
It is fake, isn't it?
No, everything you see, really. Everything you see really happens.
Didn't Mick tell you?
Yeah, I know, but I don't. All right.
It's predetermined. There's a lot of cooperation, but man, you know, those guys really lay it in. I mean, they really hurt each other. It's tough stuff.
Our guest is musician Bob Mould. His new CD, solo CD, is called Body of Song. You can go to bobmould.com for information on that and tour dates. And I imagine all the information on Bob Mould.
Yes.
What are you going to play for us now, Bob?
This one's called If I Can't Change Your Mind. Yeah.
The tears filled up my eyes. Washed away with sorrow. Somewhere in my mind, I know there's no tomorrow. I see you're living soon. I guess you've had your fill. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. If I can't change your mind, now I know I know. And all throughout the years, I never strayed from you, my dear. No, you suspect I'm somewhere else. Feeling sorry for yourself, leaving with a broken heart above you even still, yeah. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. If I can't change your mind, now I know I know, yeah, now. Even though my heart keeps breaking, don't you know that I'll be waiting here for you? Oh, then when you return, yeah, when will you return now? Hope you see I'm dedicated. Look how long that I have waited. You come back, you will find a different person if you change your mind. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, how can I explain away something that I haven't done? No, you can't trust me now. You never trust in anyone. All the crazy doubts you've got, I love you even still, yeah. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. Now I know, yeah, yeah. If I can't change your mind, now I know, I know, I know, I know. Oh, yeah. Someday you'll say I've been true. Stay that way until hell, yeah. If I can't change your mind, then no one will. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, if I can't change your mind, no, no, no. If I can't change it now, do 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 do.
Awesome. That was If I Can't Change Your Mind. That was great, Bob. Bob Mould, thank
nice
you
job.
So much
thank
for...
You, thank
thanks,
you.
Bob. Thanks for being with us. It was really great talking to you.
All right, cool.
I was glad you came by. It's weird when people play electric guitar on the radio. That was the first time. We've had many people play acoustic guitar,
yeah.
But that was the first time. And that was... It's his choice. That sound is... That is his sound. It was interesting. He had that thing on the floor in here. That was cool. All right. So, look, folks, I want to remind you that Cindy Sheehan, mother of Casey Sheehan, a 24-year-old Army specialist killed in Iraq, Iraq City in April 2004, is down there 5 miles outside of the ranch in Crawford with her bus, her red, white, and blue bus, and a lot of other groups supporting her. She's demanding to talk to the president, and she was on our show just a little while ago, and this is what she had to say.
They're going to have to carry me to a squad car because I'm not leaving. If George Bush thinks that he can intimidate me, I want to tell him I have more courage in my little finger than he has in his whole body. And my son had more courage in one cell of his body than this whole administration has. And if he thinks he's going to intimidate me and frighten me into doing something that I know is wrong, then he better think again.
That was her we were talking about the possibility that she might be arrested, which is not a definite. They're sort of trying to scare her down there. But she's doing a great thing. And if you want to get involved with that, you can go to meetwithcindy.org, and that'll link you up with the Crawford Peace House, or you can go to www.gsfp.org, which will link you with the Gold Star Families for Peace organization, which you helped start, actually. The shuttle is down, safe
safely. They've made it.
Yeah, it's good.
They took that second opportunity to land, and they land over there at Edwards Air Force Base.
Yeah, so now it's going to cost $1 million to get the thing back to Florida.
Oh, well. You know what I mean? It's better it lands safely somewhere. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Scientists conducted the first of 6 harmless gas terrorism training drills here in New York City. The gas was called oxygen, an element unknown to New York City since the late 19th century. Fewer than half of all Americans believe President Bush is honest. A solid majority still see Bush as likable and a strong leader, but then again, a solid majority also think Dick Cheney played the Maytag repairman throughout the 1970s. Experts say the dip in credibility came at least partly from Bush's inaccuracies with Iraq, such as when he said it had weapons of mass destruction, that the war would be over in a matter of months, and that it's located just 4 miles outside Chicago. Chicago. Hello, is this on? Chicago. A billboard for pizza shop in New Zealand has a picture of Bush on it with the phrase, evil bastard. The ads were immediately condemned by the Swift Boat Veterans for Pizza Truth. The pizzeria stopped trusting Bush shortly after he failed to end the Iraq War in 30 minutes or less. It's a harmless gas. Here's your talking point of the day. How do I usually set this up?
Phrase of the day.
Phrase of the day.
Just slip it in the conversation.
That's right. Yeah, it's a harmless gas because they tell you it's a harmless gas. Just like they told you Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. When a few thousand people develop tumors the size of basketballs a year from now, is anyone going to remember the harmless testing? Wake up, sheeple. You're nothing but lab rats in a maze, and the mad scientist is George W. Bush.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.